Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Padres Mets for four. Ryan, I got some thoughts on this one. You got a supposed contender in the Mets coming in. Padres fell yesterday to the Twins and fell into a tie for the top wild card spot in the National League. Two out of three from the Twins. We've got some updates. Ryan, where do you want to start?
So I have a thing that concerns me and a thing that excites me. And let's start with the concern. Matt Waldron continued to struggle again yesterday. You know, we've talked about some bad performances he's had. To me, yesterday, maybe a new low for a guy who, by the way, has been not only durable, but fairly reliable up until the last month or so. I watched him yesterday and I went, I don't know that I would trust this guy to start a playoff game. What do the Padres think of him right now? And what's the solution as he tries to figure out what's going on?
Yeah, as long as everything goes well, like Joe Musgrove continues to progress and is Joe Musgrove at the end of the season, Dylan Cease, Michael King, possibly even Yu Darvish. But, as long as everything goes according to plan, which I guess you can't count on. I know you can't count on, but let's just say Matt Waldron wasn't going to be a playoff starter in my mind for about the last 3 to 4 weeks, right?
Right.
But it is a possibility that he would have to. So, you know, hey, certainly don't want to have him looking like he looked yesterday or, quite honestly, really, let's say, for the last five starts. There's a lot of things. Could be, and maybe primarily, that he's getting tired, right? And there are indicators to that. His arm slot. The fact that he says he's a little mentally tired, the fact that he mentioned that maybe, you know, he is a little tired, right? Without kind of saying outright he's tired, he didn't deny it. It looks like he is. Also, this poor kid, and I say that, you know, poor kid, like I say that about almost any guy that is trying to navigate his first season as a full-time starter, and he's not Paul Skeens, right? He's a guy who just throws or is a pitcher, right? Like having to figure it out. And then you also throw a knuckleball. And it's a knuckleball that you love, but you also wish, like, gosh, is it like why is this pitch gotta be so weird? And so he is trying to figure that out. The guy threw one knuckleball in the first inning yesterday, clearly trying to throw the Twins off. He's had trouble in the first inning. Like, this is not something you want to be doing in your 26th start of the season, you know, ideally. Kudos to him and to Ruben Niebla. But, like, you know, there's just a lot going on for Matt Waldron.
Yeah, and to me, the thing that must be really frustrating, and like we talked about last time, he is sort of one in Major League Baseball, right?
Yes.
You know, we've spent so much time this season talking about innings limits or innings caps or innings whatever when it comes to Michael King. Right, who's never really been a major league starter before. We worry about inning count on other guys. We've never really talked about Matt Waldron and his innings count because I think in the eyes, at least of me, you go like, well, he's a knuckleballer. He should be fine. But he's not just a knuckleballer. Yeah. He throws real pitches hard. Yeah. And to a certain extent, maybe there should be some concern there. I mean, maybe he is just wiped out at this point. And, you know, because there's nobody to compare him to and there's no real history of knuckleballers like him, right? It's R.A. Dickey and ever. It may be hard to diagnose exactly what's wrong with the guy outside of he keeps getting knocked around.
Yeah, that's true. And you look at, now it's been something that has been on the mind, but you are correct. Not like it has been talked about with Michael King. Right. For 4 or 5 starts, I mean, he passed his professional innings total like 4 or 5 starts ago. Right. There was 2019 when he was drafted, he had more innings combined between the University of Nebraska rookie ball and low A, but you know, this is the major leagues. He's up there. But you're totally correct. The Padres, it's kind of like they're even trying to figure it out. Like, how much is there the normal fatigue and wear and tear? He throws that hard knuckleball. He throws these other pitches. Yeah, I think it's fairly obvious. And what I think is more obvious is that whatever it is, like Matt Waldron needs a break.
Right. How do they manufacture a break for him?
I think the easy one is Randy Vasquez, who pitched yesterday for El Paso. And he's actually pitched fairly well for the Padres. I mean, he comes up and he throws like he did, then, you know, keeps him in games. then I think that that's pretty straightforward. The reality is they still have, I'm not sure how many it is, but I do know how many turns through the rotation, and they need a fifth starter twice more before their next day off, which is what, September 3rd, their day off. They play through that Monday, 2 Mondays from now. So then they would need a fifth starter the next week. And then it's like they need a fifth starter twice more the rest of the season. Right. I'm saying that they'll go with four starters. I'm just saying like need, right? And then also it depends on how our guys pitching. And then what's your playoff situation? And do you start to rest guys or try to space them out so they're lined up for the start of the playoffs, right? So there's a lot of still to be determined, but I'm saying that after you get through this time where you've got this, you know, you're in the midst of this 18 games in 18 days, you've got some wiggle room with all the off days. I think it's 22 games in the season's final 27 games. There's also a kid named Omar Cruz down in AAA that guys don't look at the numbers, but the Padres people have been talking about for a few weeks. They feel like they have options, not like, hey, right on, but like they've got options that can help them get through.
Right. When we said 2-3 weeks ago, hey, don't look for help because help ain't coming. There might be some help down there now, right? Between Vasquez. You
have to, right?
Right. Well, like, Vasquez, the beauty of Vasquez is Vasquez can make Waldron's next start on regular rep, right? You don't have to try to line them up. They're pitching essentially on the same schedule now anyway. So if you decide that Vasquez is the guy you want, he should be good to go. What do we know about Omar Cruz?
I don't know much about him except that I've been hearing about him for a few weeks that, hey, this is a guy that has been looking good. Again, don't look at the numbers. It's El Paso. Don't look at Randy Vasquez's numbers since he went down or when he was down before. Don't, I have to when I'm willing to take the word of baseball people more than say what the numbers look like, generally speaking, when they're in AAA. So don't know much about Omar Cruz, except believe he was in the Pirates organization, whatever. I really think Randy Vasquez is the first guy out.
Yeah. Omar Cruz, left-hander, 25 years old.
That's right. Left-hander.
Yes. From Hermosillo, Mexico. And yes, was with the Pirates a year ago. You say don't look at his numbers. His stats this year are good. 6-1 with an ERA of 3.18 in AA and AAA, a whip under one.
Right, right. So I think the good stuff was at AA.
Right, correct. Well, that's interesting. And again, adding a left-hander to the mix really would, I mean, you would go from a team that really had no lefties in your rotation to now a team that has two. As a left-hander, Kevin, I can say the more lefties, the better, almost always. Let's talk about the thing that I'm excited about. And it's silly, but this is the time of year we start talking about awards. And the Mets are coming to town, and that reminds me of something that happened a long time ago that we can get into later. Jackson Merrill has overtaken Paul Skeens in terms of the odds-on favorite to win the National League Rookie of the Year Award, which is, I mean, if you're gambling on stuff like that, I worry about you, but there you go.
Is that real? That's real. Okay, yeah, all right. Real.
He's hitting .291 right now, OPS over .800. Continues to really play like a guy who's better than his 21 years. He's been a veteran guy. Just continues, I think, to be one of their better players day in and day out. Since we can't talk enough about him, Kevin, let's talk about him. What impresses you the most about him, especially lately?
Probably, the sustained ability to perform like this. The fact that he's had two mini slumps. And the second I write about him, boom, he's out of them. So you're welcome, Jackson. That's incredible, right? Like, that's incredible. Now, look, I'm not going to overplay it. He's got like a .320 on base percentage with that .290. Well, like, this is a developing player. I think we end up talking about rookie of the year, and sometimes we think, oh, man, this is like a guaranteed next step is MVP. Look, Jackson Merrill might be the MVP of the Padres, right? Like, he might get MVP votes, down the ballot, right? But because there's a lot that goes into Jackson Merrill, but there's a lot of growth to still be had and I say that, why? Because I think the guy's going to be a star. And so there does need to be that growth for him to be everything Jackson Merrill can be. But Jackson Merrill could not possibly have been more at 21 years old in his first year in the major leagues than he has been. And that includes him bringing not only his innate, the things that he was taught by his parents, the things that he had inside of him, and then also absorbing everything that he was given by these veterans on this team, by Mike Schilt, by Victor Rodriguez, by Tim Leeper, like by, he took it in and he put it into practice like right away. The kid is amazingly mature. Now you knew that, like just by talking to him, you knew that by what Padres people said about him, but to watch it over the course of a season, that's what's most impressive to me. Their leadership qualities. I don't want to get carried away in that, right? Like, because like he's still 21 years old and he is following as a 21-year-old rookie should, but he's had this amazing ability to assert himself into the Padres. And just by being Jackson Merrill, guys have been talking about this since spring training. He has energized them. He is excited to be a major league ball player.
He's showing up so early that he sits in his car because he doesn't want to tick off the clubhouse guy. Yep. Somebody in one of your, and I forget if it was a note, Kevin, or if it was a newsletter item. Some Padre said, you know, this guy doesn't have a wife to go home to or kids to go home to. He is all ball all the time. He tells us that we're all his best friends.
That's the sweetest, most awesome thing I've ever, it was Michael King, and it summed it all up.
Yeah, it did. It did. And you know, when people talk about the joy of baseball and it being a kid's game and all of that, again, I don't want to oversimplify something. I'm sure Jackson Merrill is a complicated person, but this is what we talk about. We talk about a guy getting to the ballpark really early because he can't wait to spend another day with his friend. That's really different than a lot of what we've seen here the last few.
He was in high school a little over 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So think about that. Like, not that everyone is like that, right? Like, and not that there's anything wrong with the other way or whatever, but like the kid was in high school. So put yourself in, I think we can all relate to it, right? Mm-hmm. That is super young. And now he's a major league ball player and he's kicking ass and, you know, hanging with guys that he used to watch on TV. And at the same time, not in awe of them, knows that he's one of them, and it's brilliant to watch.
Right. And again, by the way, to do it, to be 21 years old and a big league ball player, if you wanted to, you could have a lot of fun off, right? This could be, you could be burning it at both ends like you did when you were 21 and I did when I was 21, right? To me, the fact that he's as productive as he is day in and day out shows that there's a maturity there, right? That he's not just, you know, he's more than just a young guy killing it on the baseball field.
He's a ball player. And you know, yes, that is a very good point, because while as much as people might say, well, of course, I mean, this is what he's being paid to do. He's 21. He's 25 for that matter. Right. Like 35 for that matter. Right. Like it takes a certain kind of person to be this dedicated. And look, rookie of the year, take a look at him. Sometimes it portends future all-star. Look, sometimes there wasn't a whole lot of, you know, competition that year. Sometimes the league didn't know you, and then the league catches up with you. Sometimes maybe you get full of yourself, or I don't know what happens, but like, let's not get carried away with rookie of the year. I think one of the great things is it appears that Paul Skenes and Jackson Merrill both have bright futures ahead. That's probably what's most important here.
Right. I looked this up on my phone while we were talking. Before you said, look at the last rookie of the year, guys, we're going to go back just the last 10. Okay. Tell me, good major leaguer, just a guy, superstar. Let's go. Corbin Carroll last year.
Good major leaguer.
I would say jury's still out. Great last year.
Jury's still out because that's just last year. But was there a sophomore slump? There was.
Sure. To 2023, Michael Harris of the Atlanta Braves.
He's a good ball player.
Good ball player. Hurt most of this year. 2021, Jonathan India, the Cincinnati Reds.
Just a guy.
Devin Williams, the year before that. Closer, Milwaukee.
Yes, has potential, also has been hurt a little bit, right?
Yep. Famously, I think broke his hand punching something, didn't he?
And also tell when a closer is a rookie of the year, it tells you, you know, right? Like there wasn't a Jackson Merrill that year.
Right. Pete Alonso, 2019.
That's a very good ball player.
Remember in 2019, that was the thing I mentioned earlier when Chris Paddock got all mad because he wasn't rookie of the month.
Yep.
Remember the things we cared about back when they weren't very good? Okay. 2018, Ronald Acuna Jr.
Well, a great ball player.
Yes. 2017, Cody Bellinger.
Good, really, really good ball player who obviously went through some things after what was it, first year, and then was MVP. And I mean, obviously injury, but went through some things. So like, there's a really good example. That's an excellent ball player.
Yep. 2016, Corey Seager.
That is an excellent ball player.
Yes. 2015. And this is where we're going to stop, because I think that this is really interesting. Chris Bryant.
And there you go. Excellent ball player who has not become an excellent ball player. Has not been able to sustain that based on injury and you know, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris Bryant is one of those.
Hey, you know what? Those were better ball players than I expected. If we had time, we did a whole show on Rookie of the Year. We'd go further back. We'd come up with some fun examples of guys who didn't do anything. We'd come up with some Hall of Famers. Those were really great because, gosh, I'd take any of those guys on my team.
Sure.
Some of them, I think, have, you know, Hall of very good potential. But be it injury, like, there's just not a guarantee. I really like Jackson Merrill's odds of maintaining this level of play and actually becoming a much better ball player even.
Exactly. To your point, by the way, Chris Coughlin was the Rookie of the Year in 2009. Giovanni Soto, Rookie of the Year in 2008. Rafael Furcal, who I'd argue was an okay big leaguer. Jason Jennings. There are guys in there, Todd Hollinsworth, guys who it does not necessarily portend a great major league career.
It's an award that you should be proud of. To someone was telling me yesterday, the people in Pittsburgh are very upset because, you know, Jackson Merrill now. And I get that. That's great. It's great. I mean, look, everyone knows I love Pittsburgh, if you know me at all. But like, you don't have a lot to root for with your team. I mean, Paul Skeens was your thing for a while, right? And he's got the famous girlfriend, and I guess she's okay looking. I mean, everyone was real excited about it, right? Like, I get it, but they're upset. Guys, it's Rookie of the Year. You got like this fantastic pitcher who's going to be on your team next year. That's the exciting part.
But we've been there, right? We've been there. We wrote, and before I was here, I certainly paid attention to and got real worked up about the old Chris Paddock, Pete Alonso rivalry, right? That's the stuff you write about and talk about when your team's no good. Fortunately, Padres are good. The visiting Mets, are they good?
I was so excited last night, Ryan, and then I dug into the Mets a little bit. I just don't think they're very good.
Okay.
Now, they swept the Padres in June. Padres were not playing very well.
Right.
You know, we spend a lot of time here talking about the Padres taking care of business, and that's been the big difference this year. The Mets, who are 66 and 61 and have generally this year taken care of business. They're not very good against winning teams, but they've taken care of business. Recently had a run of 12 games against the A's, Marlins, and Rockies and went 6-6.
Ooh.
So were the Mets taking care of business? Now, they just took 2-3 from the Orioles. So kudos. Francisco Lindor's playing really well. Pete Alonso's dangerous as hell. Jeff McNeil is not back to league leader Jeff McNeil, but he's not the 190 hitter that we saw in June or whatever it was. I couldn't even believe it. He's a shell of himself, but he's better. This is a dangerous team. But with the way that the Braves were going, if the Mets were taking care of business, they would be in that third wild card spot. Mm-hmm. So I'm not really sure, but like I said, last night I was getting really excited because this is what the pennant race is all about. And you've got a team that's coming in here that's 1.5 games off the final wild card spot. Obviously, if they're worth anything, they're hungry as heck. You got 4 games, so you can either kind of, you know, make them a memory, right? Mm-hmm. Or you can let them back in the race.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. And it's funny. You look at them again, best team money can buy, right? But they're struggling. Or maybe I think that the standard there was set so high both last year and again this year. The Mets started off pretty hot to start the season, and it seems as if things have fizzled there a little bit. Thursday tonight, we've got Luis Severino against Dylan Cease. You know, Severino's got an ERA a little under 4, former Yankee.
Okay.
He has done.
So here's the thing on Severino. Yeah. He's coming off a shutout of the Marlins.
Right.
Severino has a 1.95 ERA in 4 starts against the Marlins and almost a 4.5 in every other start.
So he's just a guy.
You get to face the Marlins 4 times. Look, Dylan Cease. I haven't done the work, right? But like, he had that no-hitter against the Nationals. That helps his ERA. I'm just saying, like, you know, Severino coming off a shutout. Look at his other starts. So just wanted to put some perspective there. Go on.
Right. No, that makes sense. That makes sense. Let's see. Hold on. We go on to Friday 4-game series, by the way. Paul Blackburn, yep, former All-Star. We can talk later about whether or not All-Stars portend a great big league career.
They
Paul
just Blackburn, got him from the A's in a trade deadline deal.
They did. They did against Joe Musgrove.
He's been okay, I think. Four starts. He's been okay for them.
Yeah. I'm guessing with Musgrove, they'll stretch him out here. He'll be able to go a little bit longer than he has the previous.
Something like 85 pitches.
Okay. Okay, so five innings.
Open a start or two, if all goes well again, a start or two that Joe would be basically leash off.
Okay. David Peterson Saturday against Michael King. David Peterson, good. 7-1 really, ERA of 3.
Yeah. Really good. 1.85 ERA the last four starts, going 6 innings, I think, each time.
Wow. Yes, and then Sunday, Jose Quintana against Martin Perez. Now, here are some comps. Lefties, guys who were pretty good a handful of years ago.
Mixing
it up. ERAs are almost identical.
Nope. Now let's do this. Jose Quintana baffled the Padres in June. Baffled them for 6 innings, 1 run. His last 4 starts, 8.27 ERA, 20 2/3 innings. So we'll see.
We'll see. Martin Perez again. You know, we thought he was that he had found new life here, and then really was not good in his last outing. Though the Padres have won all 4 of his starts. Needed 3 runs and 5 2/3 in a – oh, wait, the last time he faced the Mets, I'm sorry. He went 5 2/3 and allowed 3 runs. That's pretty good. Yes?
Okay. He was not great this last time, but it was a – I'll tell you what. He was so much better than what you thought you were getting the first 3 starts, right? This last one, like, okay, Martin Perez. Like, that's what you got. Help you get through, right? Like – You want more. You've seen that you can get more out of him, but it wasn't horrible his last start. Like, I still say, you know, all right, this guy's doing what the Padres got him to do. But, you know, look, that's why the Waldron thing's so scary and why this is so fun. Because, like, everything feels big now, right? Okay, yes. So if Waldron's not going to pitch well, then it's more important that Perez pitches well. And yeah, right? Like Cease gets, you know, to be Cease, and Musgrove keeps progressing, and maybe Yu Darvish, who's still throwing to high schoolers, will come back, and everything just seems so big, and that's what's exciting about this time of year.
It does seem so big. It seems so big that, again, even like a Wednesday afternoon roster move, I think is compelling, and I'd like you to help explain this to me if you can, okay? Padres called up Matt Batten on Tuesday, correct?
Yeah.
From AAA, where Matt Batten was struggling, right? Okay. Wednesday, they decide to call up Mason McCoy. Matt Batten goes back. So Mason McCoy up, Matt Batten down. Between the time Batten got here and Batten left, Xander Bogaerts said something to you and to others about his willingness to play shortstop on a regular basis going, okay. Did his statements have anything to do with the Padres' decision to then turn around and call up a shortstop?
Not his statements. Look, one of the factors here is that when Batten is called up and they need to get Batten here who's a utility player, they didn't know for sure how long Ha Sung Kim was going to be out.
Okay.
Ha Sung Kim out for at least 10 days, you want a real shortstop, and Mason McCoy is a starting shortstop in, you know, the minor leagues. So now he's probably going to platoon with Tyler Wade.
Okay.
So that's one of the differences. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that they truly wanted Xander Bogaerts to move to shortstop full time.
Right. You said that the whole time.
For sure is Xander Bogaerts did not want to move to shortstop after he's made all of this investment to go to second base. So from my understanding, the big thing was that not really knowing what Ha Sung Kim's status was, Matt Batten was the call. And then it was like, nope, we're going to go with the guy who can actually start for us.
Okay. Padres play a couple of lefties this week. Mason McCoy is a righty hitter. Would you anticipate Mason McCoy being the guy at short against left-handed pitching?
I would think so. Yes. That was what the indication yesterday was.
Okay.
Big Tyler Wade guy, but he's a left-handed hitter, and his numbers, I don't think they speak for themselves because he's been far more valuable to this team than his numbers. But, you know, yeah, I think that they'll get a righty in there.
It was the last time we had talked about this on here, you had mentioned you know, the possibility of Cronenworth maybe moving over to short, and that would allow you to give Donovan Solano some regular at bats, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What changed there, do you think?
I honestly don't know, other than that the Brain Trust had, I will say this for them, they have consistently been against, and this is Mike Schilt, I believe, leading this, they have consistently been against moving guys around as much as they used to, right? Yeah. As much as it became like this trendy thing in baseball, and oh, look at this versatility we have in all these guys, Ha-Sung Kim, Jake Cronenworth. They have decided, I think, that, and this is based on kind of the things that they say, even though they haven't come out and said it the way that I am, that they want to leave Jake Cronenworth on the right side. That that's where he's at. I do think he's their best second baseman. I think everyone thinks he's their best second baseman. Neither here nor there is Xander. And I don't think there's, look, Xander took the bullet and moved to second base when he didn't want to. And he's done it like phenomenally in terms of his attitude. And he has gotten better at it. There's no reason to move him back to shortstop, like, whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, he's hitting.
You don't have to.
Right. Also, he's comfortable. He's hitting. Yeah. I mean, to a certain extent, this is just an if it ain't broke, don't fix it thing, right?
Yes.
You can slide. If they think that this is 10 days, maybe a little bit more, we're talking about Mason McCoy starting 5 games over 2 weeks, a little more.
I don't know exactly what's going on in that room about this conversation, but I do think that it opens up a little something for you to say, you know, Mr. Controller, as the narrative goes, AJ Preller, he and Mike might have some different ideas and Mike might be winning some of these.
Yeah.
Now, when I say winning, I don't mean it's a fight. I mean, like, this is how a brain trust works when it's working well.
Sure, sure.
Is everyone's got a voice. And I think it's working as well this year as it has, like, since it's mattered, right?
Yeah.
Maybe 2020 it worked better because, you know, maybe AJ was running the show and it was a 60-game season, right? And Manny Machado had 1,000 OPS. I think that they are doing a phenomenal job working this roster. Like, when I was thinking about what I wanted to say about the Mets, like, when the Padres went there in June, even with Xander down, it just was bizarre that the Padres got swept. They just had it appeared they had a superior roster to the Mets. Right. I don't know that that's the case now. Right. Like with Tyler Wade and Mason McCoy starting at shortstop, Tatis is out. I think, you know how highly I think of David Peralta and what he's done, but I'm talking about just taking the baseball cards, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know that you say that the Padres are that superior to the Mets.
Right.
So I think that the AJ Preller, the coaching staff, the front office has done a fantastic job of what is that? What was Mike's? It's not cohesion. Mike's word at the beginning of the year that he was so big on. How did I forget it? But it's basically cohesion. It's everybody working together and being, if not on the same page, they find a way to get there. And so I think that this is one of those cases. I don't know exactly what happened there, but I think this is one of those cases.
Right. And maybe, you know what? This is a team that's hitting well enough and winning ball games. Maybe you don't necessarily feel like you need to have your 9 best hitters in the lineup every night.
Well, right? There's another thing. could they be scrambling if they, if things weren't going well and saying, oh man, yeah, we got to force this, right? But now it didn't end up mattering yesterday, but it did. Was it the day before? Donovan Solano off the bench. Pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Very good. Before we go, Kevin, I always put you on the spot. Here's one of visiting fans, because I'm guessing you're going to hear a lot of New York Mets fans over the next 4 days. Of visiting fans to Petco Park, where do Mets fans rank in terms of size, noise, and obnoxiousness?
Well, you know, it's come to vary based on Padres fans holding onto their tickets more and all that. But the Mets are kind of sneaky big. Cardinals are sneaky big. And obviously Dodgers. So we put them in a league of their own.
Right. Cubs in that conversation?
Cubs are big. Where do they rank? Probably, again, I'm thinking 2018 when the place was basically orange.
Right, right.
They're middle of the pack, but it's going to be far more than the Twins. It was easy to dominate that ballpark the last, not so much yesterday. Day games are always weird. But the first 2 nights, because there just weren't a lot of Twins fans. So they were noisy, the ones that were there. I enjoy Mets fans. I enjoy Mets fans a lot. They are very demanding. Now I'm thinking of when they're in New York. They don't boo their team here. But, man, They are very demanding, and they love their Mets. But they're like a Padres fan that has two World Series, and they're in New York, right? Where talk radio just going all the time, and you know there's still like four newspapers, and you know it's like just sports, and we demand wins. Why I compare them to the Padres fans is Mets fans are always expecting something bad to happen.
Yeah.
They're demanding good, but they're always expecting something bad to happen.
Right. And they've got a little chip on their shoulder because they're not the Yankees,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that in Padre land, a little bit.
It is a funny thing. And look, justified. A lot of bad stuff has happened.
Right. No, you're right. Well, four-game series, Padres-Mets, starting tonight, Thursday, at Petco Park. Should be very interesting, Kevin. Very curious to see how the Padres play against these two left-handed starters. Very curious to see what it looks like now that they're playing yet another good team.
Yeah, no, they have mostly handled it. They really have. It has been a mix, right? They had the nice stretch in the middle of this. What are we up to now? 29 games, and they still have the best record in the majors since the All-Star break. Obviously, they had the Rockies and the Pirates who are sinking and all that. But you know what? They had the Guardians and the Orioles and the Twins as well. So the Dodgers swept the Dodgers two-game series. The Padres, when they are playing, I honestly believe that they stack up against pretty much everybody. Haven't seen the Phillies in a while. Haven't seen the Yankees. But the Padres, if the Padres play like the Padres have been playing, there's a very clear path to that top wild card spot. I don't think at this point. Right. I said this a few weeks ago, and I think it's playing out so far. When the Dodgers need to get busy, the Dodgers get busy. I think they're going to take care of the West, but there's a very clear path to that top wild card spot.
Absolutely. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.